All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on Joe Bucks Fan. I am Bobby Fenton, middle of the off-season edition. In fact, as I record today, live from One Game Day Place, we sit exactly 28 days, 4 weeks from today, the NFL Draft, which will be in Green Bay at Lambeau Field and the surrounding area in late April. And until then, you know, we already had the combine. Now we're going through pro days individually. The Gators just had theirs, and every USF had theirs, and all the schools all over the country were having theirs. And now it's just kind of a little bit of a lull. And they really could have the draft sooner. I say this every year. I mean, they have the draft so late. But then if you had the draft like in the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, instead of 4 weeks, then you would just be making the rest of the offseason longer. So at least this keeps people talking about something a little bit longer before we get into the real true offseason, which is after the draft. And there'll be the schedule release and all that. And that's always something to look forward to. But other than that, I mean, we're right now, again, it's March 27th as I record, 4 months, right? Training camp opens late July. I don't know the exact date yet. But 4 months from right now, we'll be back in the swing of things. And there's plenty to keep us occupied until then, both in the world of football and not today's show. We got a lot of catching up to do. And so we're going to do it as far as where the Bucks rest right now going into the draft. And since we last talked, a few things have happened. All good, in my opinion. Chris Godwin, of course, we know all about that. The three-year, $66 million re-up to stay in Tampa Bay, $44 million guaranteed. And like I've said before on the show, you know, coming off of an injury the second time, maybe you get a little squeamish about that. But if it was the same type of injury, if he had done something to the knee again or something, it'd be worse. This was unrelated to that, and it was not a ligament thing or anything like that. It was a bad injury. Don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting here making it sound like it was no big deal. I wouldn't want to go through it. But I don't think he'll be worse for the wear because of it. And so the Bucs keeping pretty much the starting 11 intact for the offense, as they've got everything shored up with Bredesen up front, the guard, the left guard, that was, you know, he was the only one they had to get taken care of on the offensive line. Now they've got Godwin in place. Of course, everybody else is ready to go. And so it bodes well. Obviously, the offensive coordinator is the only person not coming back. We talked all about that. But Josh Grizzard, so far, nothing but good things everybody's been saying about him. And I think that if you were looking at this Bucs team for 2025, especially compared to the rest of the division, which is getting a little better, but still not there, I don't think, yet, or at least I hope not, I still think the Bucs compare favorably. And that's before you talk about any additions, whatever happens in the draft. And of course, there was Haason Reddick signed by the Buccaneers. It was nice to see them address it. It's not the only way they're going to address it. I still fully believe they're going to draft, and it might even be with their first round pick. But either way, they're going to address pass rush even more in the draft. Still doesn't hurt to get a guy like Reddick. And what you're getting with Reddick, you know, you don't know for sure because he's almost got a tale of two careers. Drafted in 2017, his first 3 years, he was a linebacker. This is with Arizona. They made him an edge, went off for 12 and a half sacks. Didn't even know that's what he was, you know. They just say, let's try this guy at edge, and he ended up being a natural at it. Had, like I said, 12 and a half sacks there, 5 forced fumbles, had 7 and a half sacks in 3 years before that. Went to Carolina, 11 sacks there in 2021, so still humming. Then 2022 in Philadelphia, 16 sacks, another 5 forced fumbles. This isn't that long ago, right? 2023, 11 sacks. That's only the season before last. And then in 2024, he goes to the Jets. First, he held out after he was traded there through Week 8, wanted a new deal. Then when he finally started playing in the final 10 games, only had 1 sack. And it was a weird kind of, it wasn't hurt, or at least not knowingly, was he hurt? So it was kind of like, okay, what happened there? Is something wrong with him? Did he lose it? Or is it an aberration? Is it an anomaly? We'll see. But I think it's well worth finding out for the Bucks at the price they were able to get him. 1 year, $14 million. I know that people wanted Khalil Mack. He was out there. He's more of a power type. The Bucks wanted, here's the thing. The Bucks wanted kind of someone in the mold of a speed guy like Shaq Barrett was with JPP, and kind of like how Yaya Diaby is more of the power guy. They wanted a complement to that on the other side, more of a speed rush type of guy, which is what Haason Reddick is. So I know Khalil Mack, everybody loves him. It wouldn't have been a bad thing, but he didn't fit the mold of that. He's more of a power guy as much as Reddick did. Again, 1 year, $14 million worth of stab. Like the move. Doesn't mean they're done with solidifying the pass rush by far. Problem is, I mean, where they pick down there at 19, I mean, they might get, you know, your first round pick, you always think of, okay, we want to get one of the top two or three at the worst guys at our position that we're looking for. And they might get like the number four or five pass rusher. That doesn't always mean it's a bad thing. And it doesn't mean just because you got him fourth or fifth at that position that he's fourth or fifth. Look at Tristan Wirfs, right? I mean, the Bucs needed a tackle that year. Four teams in front of them needed a tackle. And I thought, at least personally, and I've made plenty of draft misses in my day, but on this one, I thought, I was like, Wirfs is the guy. Like, if I had had the first choice of any tackle that year, I would have taken Wirfs, you know? And yet, teams kept going with that position, but other guys. And the Bucs, who were the last ones of any of them, I think there was one other, that's why they traded up a spot, because they were worried about one other team behind them. But all these other teams went different directions to mixed reviews, and the Bucs got at least what looks like a future Hall of Famer as of right now. And so, who knows who they, you know, I know people are talking about Jihad Campbell. There's all these names. We'll do more of the draft stuff as we get a little closer. It feels like we're close, right? Still 4 weeks away, but we'll have plenty of time to get into all that. My point is, you get Reddick, now you get a chance to get another guy up front. We'll see what else they want to do in the draft. A lot of defensive needs, much more than offense, which they return everybody to what was a very high-performing offense. So it's exciting. I mean, I'm excited about the Bucs. If you want to talk about, and I'm not huge into the gambling or prediction markets, but if you want to talk about win totals, if you're into that whole thing, Bet Online, that's just one outlet, but Bet Online has the Bucs placed at 9.5 wins over under for their futures bets for the 2025 season. That's the highest in the NFC South. And in fact, they've got, let me look here, they've got four teams listed at a win total of 11.5, the Bills, Chiefs, Eagles, and Ravens. They've got four more teams listed at 10.5. The Bengals, Commanders, Lions, and 49ers, then the Bucs, part of a group of five at 9.5. So only eight teams in the NFL have a higher predicted win total, or at least over-under, than the Bucs do. And in the South, the Bucs at 9.5, then it's the Falcons at 7.5, Panthers at 6.5, Saints at 5.5. And I bet on games, but I don't really do a lot of future stuff. I don't like having my money tied up all year. I'd like to lose it right away rather than just wait for 3 months and then lose it. So I think the Saints is the one that jumps out at me because I think 5.5. I think 6 wins is pretty ambitious for the Saints. I'd be surprised. I could be wrong about that. But either way, the division is there for the Bucs. The Falcons, by the way, I know they're kind of a media darling, and yet the Vegas totals don't reflect it. But Penix looks like he might be pretty good, which I was hoping maybe wouldn't be the case. So I would bet the over on the Falcons at 7.5. Everybody else, who knows? Either way, the Bucs are in a decent spot coming into 2025. And honestly, I mean, I look at this past season, and I'm not saying they would have won the Super Bowl or anything like that, but time heals wounds, I guess. I still, every once in a while, like every week, like once or twice a week, not a lot, but every week, like once or twice a week, I think about that Bucs fumble on the handoff exchange against the Commanders after they stopped the Commanders in the red zone on fourth and goal and looked like they had the game in their hands. All they need to do is drive down and score. If they do that, they win. But even if they don't score, if they just drive for a little bit and punt, they're probably not in terrible shape. And instead, they fumbled it. Unforced error. I'm still thinking, I don't think about it every day anymore like I did the first week or so after the game. My point is, though, the Bucs were good enough, at the very least, the Bucs were good enough to go to the NFC Championship game. And they didn't get it done because of a self-inflicted mistake. I don't know if they would have beaten the Eagles or anything like that, but they did beat the Eagles very, very handily, albeit without A.J. Brown, earlier in the season. They're good enough to be one of those teams, is my point. They're good enough to be there in January. But getting there is hard. It was hard this past year, even with the Falcons. You know, I mean, they eventually did give it up, but the Falcons kind of had to. The Bucs gave it up and got it back thanks to both a late season winning streak on their part, but also Atlanta coming up short. And you can't always count on the division being winnable with 9 wins or 10 wins. You know, you might have to go 11-6, 12-5, which is what you should have to do. Honestly, we've been fortunate the past few years, but the Bucs, I think, are also capable of doing that if they get certain things addressed offensively, which they are on their way to now with Hassan Reddick as just one of the guys. They also re-signed Anthony Nelson, Greg Gaines, and they basically just kind of laying the foundation, you know, making a couple additions here and there, but really just keeping together a group that, you know, honestly, without the injuries, and every team has injuries, but they had a really bad year injury luck-wise. So you say, who's another addition on defense? Well, I mean, I'm hoping at least. Who knows if he comes back the same, but Servasia Dennis, right? I mean, he got hurt early in the season, and for all the big names, you had a guy like him who wasn't like a high-round draft pick or a glamour shot guy. He was one of the most important losses, even more than the corners. I thought the corner, I mean, obviously having Josh Hayes out there in the secondary isn't ideal either. But the injuries to the corners were one thing. The Bucs defense took a nosedive after they lost Servasia Dennis because he was a coverage linebacker. And they lost him early in the year for the whole year. So if he comes back and he's healthy and normal and performs at the level he was performing before he got hurt this past season, then that's an off-season addition, even though it's not really an off-season addition to your roster. Like, that's a big off-season addition. And, of course, they'll get something added at corner. That's another thing that I'm pretty sure they're going to do in the draft. Injuries got to them there, but still, even if everybody had been healthy, you needed one more. And so you hope that you're able to do that. You hope some guys return to form like Antoine Winfield Jr. and others. Hope isn't a plan, but I think they have taken actual steps too to get better and are going to continue to do that in the draft. So I feel good. I feel good about where the Bucs are right now, roster-wise. On the sideline, another addition was made. And this one, you know, not maybe that big of a deal, or at least doesn't seem like one. But I'll tell you what. They hired somebody whose official title is Director of Football Research. And basically what he is a game day consultant. Basically what he is, I think Bill Simmons, if you ever read him back in the days on ESPN, page two, he used to talk about every team needs to have like a Madden guy. It could be like a junior in high school, but some kid who plays Madden a lot and knows all these game situations who can say, whoa, you got to use a timeout here. Whoa, don't challenge that. Just someone who can be in your ear about clock management, timeouts, challenges, down and distance, all those little things. And so, you know, do we go for this fourth down? Do we punt? That type of stuff, which Todd Bowles, honestly, I think has gotten a lot better with the past couple of seasons. We used to complain quite a bit on this show about fourth down decisions, punting versus not punting. There have been some clock things. Every team goes through this, by the way. But the reason every team goes through this, that's why I'm not like ripping Bowles, and he was better anyway recently, is because it's hard. Now, it doesn't seem hard, but this is why you hire a guy like this. It's hard when you're trying to do a million different things. Things get missed, even if they seem like, oh my God, how could they not know to call a timeout there? Well, when you're coaching, like, and I've never coached at the NFL level. I've coached high school football as an assistant, okay? That's it. And even I know how hard it is down there when you're trying to keep track, especially like Todd Bowles, who calls defense, which isn't quite as hard as calling offensive plays. But my point is, it's hard to call plays, worry about personnel substitution, this, that, and the other. Everybody's yelling and screaming. You need a guy. Every team should have what the Bucs just hired, whose only job is to think about this other stuff and doesn't have to worry about, even a position coach has to worry about his guys. He has to worry about substitutions, whatever. His name's Zach Beistlein. He comes from Jacksonville. His official title is Director of Football Research, basically a game day consultant. He was doing the same type of thing in Jacksonville. In fact, Urban Meyer, I know you say whatever you want about Urban Meyer, Urban Meyer spoke very glowingly of him, said he saved them a bunch of times, recalled a few instances on challenges and fourth down things where this guy had come up with some good stuff that they may have missed if it hadn't been for him. And yeah, I used to do this, actually. When I coached high school football, my uncle was the head coach. We were at Jefferson, won a state championship in 2010. But my uncle Mike was one of those high school football coach lifers. Like, he coached for 40 years, was an assistant, was an offensive coordinator, was a head coach. I was the ball boy growing up when I was a little kid. I've been around football sidelines my whole life. And when I started coaching with him, I was the JV wide receivers coach, which was so much fun. I loved like having the new kids and teaching them the game. But that's not even the point. On Friday nights for the real games, the varsity games, I didn't have anything to do, but I was still on the sideline, still in my coach's polo shirt, still part of the coaching staff for the varsity, even though really I was one of the JV coaches. And I would stand, my uncle called the plays. Like, he was the head coach, but he also called the plays. I'd stand right next to my uncle, right on his hip, the entire game. And every single down, I would just whisper in his ear, here's what's going on. Because he's trying to call plays. He's trying to put guys in and out. He's trying to talk to the quarterback. So it helps a lot to have someone who does that. Like, for example, we'd be on defense. Just to give you a little example of how a guy like this can be a help. We'd be on defense. Other teams got the ball. They throw an interception. Our guy picks it off, runs it back down inside the 15-yard line, gets knocked out of bounds at the 13. Everybody's screaming and yelling on the sideline. The band's playing behind us. All the fans are yelling. It's chaos down there. And instead of getting all excited, I'd be right my uncle. Okay, it's first and 10 from the 13-yard line. You're on the right hash. You've got two timeouts here, 2:25 to go in the second quarter till halftime. Right away, he can already start thinking about what play he wants to call, what hash am I on, all those little things. That's all I did. I didn't have anything else to do. And he told me, I know you think, oh, well, whatever, Bobby, that's your uncle. No, it helped him a lot. And it helped all of us a lot because it was one less thing he had to do. I'd say, okay, you know, think about using your timeouts here after your second down play call. You can call a play anywhere you want in the field right now. Until then, just go do your thing. And just little, and he'd listen to me. He wouldn't even look at me a lot of the time, but he'd listen to me. He'd make his call. That's what you need. And we didn't have challenges and stuff like that in high school or replay or anything like that. But it really does help. So I look forward to seeing, and you know, in a small sample size, we're talking about a 17-game season here. You know, a guy like that could be, and I say could be, worth one win. Maybe the difference he makes is one game, one decision that would have gone one way out of the whole season would have gone the other. But that's a big deal. And these are multi-million-dollar organizations. Again, every team should have a guy like that. Like, every team should have a guy who's sitting there and just staying with the head coach and advising him on timeouts, advising him on down and distance, advising him on this, there, whoever's calling the plays, not just the head coach, on this, that, and the other, and make sure none of that stuff gets missed. Because that's the low-hanging fruit to me. Like, it's one thing, I coach my son and all, you know, a bunch of kids now in all 8,000 different youth sports I coach, but I tell them the same thing no matter what I'm coaching them in. I say, you know, sometimes you swing the bat and you miss, or you throw the ball a little too high or low, or you dive and you can't quite catch it, or the other guy knocks it away. Those things, you can't control that. The other guy's playing hard too. You're going to come out on top sometimes. You're going to come out, come up short sometimes. But if you do something that nobody is stopping you from doing, if you do something like that wrong, or you don't do something that you could have done, that, you know, stuff like that, that's on you, okay? You're not going to hit the ball into the gap for a 3-run double every time. You might strike out. Stuff like that happens. But if you make a mental mistake, or you forget, you know, a situation where base runners are, or in football, what the down and distance was, or you forget out of bounds, inbounds, and the clock, those things are on you. Nobody's stopping you from doing those things. So that's, to me, the easiest thing not to mess up. But it's, as you all know, because you all watch football just like I do, or you wouldn't be listening to this show, it happens every single week. So I'm not trying to get too excited about some very garden variety hire. And like I said even before, I think Bowles was doing pretty well the last couple seasons anyway. But it's a good hire. So now let's get ready for the draft. Let's get ready for the schedule release. Let's get ready for whatever's going to come our way, because right now the Bucs are in that mode where they're putting the finishing touches on something that definitely still needs work, but only needs a few key things left to fix it up. There are a few other things going on as well. The competition committee, this is the time of year when they start going over. There's the rule change recommendations that teams are allowed to submit, and then you vote on it, and it has to have 24 of the 32 teams that say, yeah, okay, we want to do that before they change the rule. Then they've got some of their own ideas and submissions. They are still trying to get the whole kickoff thing right. There's already been plenty of talk about moving the touchback spot 5 yards further up to the 35. This is because they still had more touchbacks than they wanted this past season. And so they're thinking, okay, let's make it even better for the offense to start at the 35, then teams won't want to kick it in the end zone as much anymore. And so, let me say this much, okay? There's an obvious, easy way to reduce the number of touchbacks that have nothing to do. You can put the touchback back at the 20-yard line where it should be, okay? You don't need to put it at the 30 or 35 or try and incentivize teams or anything like that. You have to physically make it harder to kick the ball in the end zone. Move the kickoff back, like the spot back where the kicker's kicking from, and you'll have fewer touchbacks. I don't know why they refuse to do this. And they keep toying with all, it's like the tail wagging the dog, like that movie, Wag the Dog. Like, hey, maybe if we move the, maybe if we give the receiving team first and goal at the 3-yard line, if there's a ball kicked in the end zone, maybe then it won't be touched back. Like, stop. Just make it so the kicker can't reach the freaking end zone, and then you won't have to worry about it. You know, they kick off from the 35 now. And it used to be the 30-yard line, like growing up, like back in the day. And so then they moved it up to the 35 because they wanted fewer kick returns at that point. And that was the whole idea because of the injuries. The kickoff is the most injury-prone play in all of football. This is before they had the new one with the guys lining up closer to each other. Then they came up with this new thing where the guys line up 5 yards from each other. That reduces the injuries. Okay, well now we want more returns because returns aren't as dangerous anymore. Except they never moved the kickoff back from the 35 to the 30. Even at the 30, I mean, if you look at the average kickoff and where most balls land when the kicker just gives it a ride, isn't trying to place it or anything like that, it usually lands like 6, 7, 8 yards deep. Some are just completely out of the back of the end zone. So even from the 30-yard line, if they kicked off from there, most kicks would break the goal line, but it might just be a yard or two, or at the most like 2 or 3 yards, and a lot would be short. I mean, not every kickoff goes into the end zone when you kick off from the 30, and boom, there you go, voila. No fair catches, we're putting you at the 25, no this or that. It's a live ball. You got to do something with it if you're not in your own end zone. If you're in your own end zone, you can take a knee. But if not, you better turn the afterburners on and go. Now we got the two sides 5 yards from each other. We don't have to worry about them hurting themselves as much. And just move the kick spot back. Like, it's so simple and very frustrating. And I know a lot of people just say, why do they keep messing with this at all? Like, what happened to the old? Because I'm like you. I'm a fan. I like kickoff. Like, when there's an actual kickoff that's fielded and returned, that's a quality football play. I always like that. I like the way it looks, like it's visually pleasing, especially, and we don't have it as much now because of cell phones, but I love back in, I say the old days, like 10, 15 years ago, but like, I love the visual of the kicker with his arm up in the air, like looking at both sides of the ball, making sure his 5 guys are ready on both sides. Then he drops that arm and goes and kicks it, and 10 guys in unison just take off in a dead sprint down the field. They're looking to take someone's head off. 10 other guys are looking to take their heads off while they're looking to take the return man's head off. I mean, it's awesome. Like, it's an awesome thing to watch. And the flash bulbs would all, like the Super Bowl, the opening kickoff of the Super Bowl. Now we have cell phone cameras. It's not quite the same, but it'd be all the flash bulbs would go off and the guys running down the field. So cool. So fun. But it could not be denied. It was a very injury-riddled play. And one of the ways I know this, if you follow, I didn't think I posted it on Twitter. I'm 44. But I had the bright idea this past spring. I've done it a few seasons in the past, but I said I want to do it one more time. I had the bright idea to sign up to play amateur football. And I'm talking about real football, like with pads, not flag football. Amateur football in the EAFL, which is like a semi-pro football league in Florida. It's got teams here in the Tampa Bay area, South Florida, Jacksonville, Orlando. And you play a 10-game schedule. This is real football. I play for the Dunedin Highlanders, which our home games are over at Dunedin High School. Go to DunedinHighlanders.com, by the way, and check it out. I'll post the schedule on my Twitter as well, at Bobby Game Day. But I'm playing, like at 44, I'm playing football. And obviously, first of all, I was never even that great of a player in my prime or anything like that. Like, I was mostly a backup wide receiver in high school and played special teams. And that's what I'm doing now. Now I'm a backup safety instead of a backup wide receiver because I'm not even athletic enough to play receiver at this point. But I mainly play special teams. But I'm on every special teams, though. And we use the college rules, so we still have the regular kickoff. So I'm on kickoff, kickoff return, punt team, punt return, all of them, all four of them. So even though I don't play on offense or defense much or ever really, I still am on the field for about 10 to 15 snaps a game. And kickoff coverage is by far my least favorite. And I've gotten hurt twice now. A few years ago when I did this the last time, and then this season in the first game, I hurt my arm running downfield trying to tackle a guy. Because you're it's so much different at full speed. Like when the guy that you're running into, whether it's a blocker or the ball carrier, is a few steps in front of you getting their start, it's not that big of a deal. But the longer distance both sides are covering, like football's not the hits all the time. It's not the tackles all the time. It's the collisions. Like those are a totally different thing. And so like I was running pretty fast for me at least, not really that fast. and the kickoff guy was running back at me with the ball, and he didn't come right at me. He was kind of like a little bit to my left, and I reached out to grab him with my arm, and it was just my arm, and the force of it just, and I pull more muscles than I used to when I was younger, but something like a guitar string went off in my like bicep, like crook of my elbow area. Boom. And it hurt bad. Like, I was out. I actually haven't played since then. I've only played one game, but we got a few more games left. I'm going to play again. But my point is, I get it. Like, kickoffs are very, very rough. And I would love to be able to just line up 5 yards away from the kick return team. It would really reduce the amount of stuff that happens. It's totally a safety play. So I totally get why they had to do something about kickoffs. I understand it. But if you still want the returns, just move the kicker back, man. It's not that hard, and you don't have to change anything else. You can keep the dynamic kickoff. I like that idea. It's a good compromise. It still looks enough like a kickoff where it's not too radical. It still feels like a kickoff return. The return man catches the ball like a basket catch, gets going. There's a wall of people trying to take his head off. The blockers are trying to take their heads off. All the old elements of a kickoff are still there, only safer. Keep it. It's good. But kick it off from the 30, or even kick it off from the 25. It doesn't even matter. Just get it off the 35, where these modern kickers, you know, the kicker in 1987 was some ex-soccer player with a pot belly who was like balding, and these guys could barely hit half their field goals from more than 40 yards. Now these guys are like supreme athletes, specialists. The kickoff guys are absolute. I mean, it's like a cannon going off when you watch these guys kick. If you ever go to a Bucks game or any game, like, if you get there early enough, go watch warmups and just watch the place kickers and punters in warmups. And if you can get, like, especially if you can get down close and it's not that loud in the stadium yet, like, it is unbelievable. Like, the thump they put into the ball, and it's like a cannon going. I just whoosh, and the ball just flies. So they can kick the ball from the 35-yard line almost through the uprights. And so I don't care what other rules you do. If that's still the same, the ball's flying through the end zone. Yeah, okay, we'll make the touchback further out. A lot of teams just don't mind. They'd rather not chance a return. You can put the ball anywhere you want to put it. They don't want to take a chance that somebody breaks one or something goes wrong. The only way to really truly solve the problem, move them back to the 30, and then the ball will land in the field of play, and there will be no choice but to return the football, which is what we really want. But yeah, semi-pro. I say semi-pro really loosely because there's nothing pro about it. It's totally amateur. We pay them. We have to pay our league fees to play and supply our own helmets and pads, get ourselves to the even the road game. Like, we, you know, our home games were at Dunedin High School, but we got road games in Lakeland. We got one on the East Coast, like over by like Merritt Island. We got one in Ocala. It's football. Hey, let me tell you something. I'll just say this, okay? Here's the reason I did this. Obviously, it's probably not a good idea at age 44, although I'm in pretty good shape. I still feel okay. But other sports, you can just go play. Like, you can go play pickup basketball, and that's not NBA basketball, but you are playing basketball, right? Like, it's basketball. You can go play rec league softball, and that's not the same as, like, fast-pitch baseball, except for the batter-pitcher interaction, though. It pretty much kind of is the same. Like, you're out there playing ball. You're in center field, or you're at shortstop. You know, it's not the same level, of course, but you're playing it. You cannot go play pickup football. Like, you can't fake football. Like, football, there's a feeling you get in the pit of your stomach, especially like I talked about just now on kickoff, where I'm standing there, I'm looking across at the kickoff return team, and they're looking at me, and I'm like, in my mind, like, this is happening. And you get this, like, I don't want to say sick feeling, but you get this feeling in the pit of your stomach that's more than just butterflies. Like, it's the only thing I could probably compare it to, and I've never done it, is boxing or MMA or anything. Like my coach Dom Sayo used to say in high school at Jesuit, Dominic Sayo was our head coach, and he didn't like guys like laughing and stuff before the game and messing around in the locker room. He'd say, somebody is trying to hurt you tonight, and they're allowed to, and you're laughing. He said, well, he'd always say that. But he was right. Like, you might get hurt, you might, you know, sprain your ankle or your ACL or something in basketball, but no one's trying to hurt you. Like, in football, someone is trying to hurt you. In fighting, someone is trying to hurt you. And honestly, the reason I signed up is because you can't feel that way. That feeling you get, that you can't, I mean, unless somebody's literally trying to hurt you, which luckily outside of sports, nobody has ever tried, but you know, it's a feeling that I know I'm probably never going to have again. This is the last time I'm ever going to do this, if I even make it out of this season. And it's a feeling you can't get anywhere else. And I'm not saying everybody should run out and go play amateur football. But if you're an ex-football player and you're still in pretty good shape, I encourage you to look at it and test yourself a little bit. And I don't even mean physically. I know where I am physically. It's not that great. It's not that bad. Mentally, I'm testing myself. Where am I mentally? And I've honestly passed some and failed some. But what I do know is I'm not really all that into body collisions anymore, so I probably don't belong on the kickoff coverage. I love blocking stuff. I love being on kickoff return. Love being on punt return. All those things are great. But yeah, you know, you learn a lot about yourself. And that's why it's the same with kids. Like my son just started tackle football now. And I don't know if he's going to be a football player or not. But I think every young man, whether it's high school or 7th or 8th grade or whatever it is, especially if you like football and you like watching it on TV, you need to know what it's like. Like, you need to have buckled it up at least once before. It doesn't matter the level. Like I said, even at a low level like middle school football or high school football, if you've put the pads on, if you've buckled a chin strap, if you've gone out there and somebody has tried to hurt you, then you know what that's like in a way that somebody who has never done it before never can and never will. And there's something pretty cool about that, I think. So, you know, football teaches you more about life than any other sport, playing it, I'm talking about. Not always good, not always bad. It'll just teach you a lot about life and about yourself. And people who have played know that. And again, you don't have to have been a stud. I hardly was. I barely started. But I know. And I think anybody else out there right now who has played is probably nodding their head too. So check it out. DunedinHighlanders.com is our team website. It's the EAFL. Team's 3-0 right now. Pretty good team. Got a hell of a quarterback in Nate Munson, if anybody out there knows him. Really proud of what he's doing. And yeah, I say like I'm proud, like I'm these guys' dad or older brother. It's because I am literally twice their age. Like, we got most of the guys in the team in their early 20s. Some are their late 20s. Few in their 30s. No, I'm older than everybody, including the coaching staff. Like, the head coach is the only person in the whole organization older than me. But it's awesome. And everybody, it's a great group. And there's teams all over Florida. Anyway, that's it for the free stretch. Mid-season, off-season edition. We'll be back. We're going to get back into the groove here now that the draft's coming up and try and start circling that. But in the meantime, email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. On Twitter, you can always get me at BobbyGameDay. Same thing, BobbyGameDay at BobbyGameDay. Thanks for listening. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform. The single best place anywhere, TV, internet, radio, is JoeBucksFan.com for Bucks coverage. I'm Bobby Fenton. We'll be back next week. Have a great weekend, opening weekend of baseball, NCAA tournament, hockey. There's all kinds of fun. Whatever you do, though, wherever you are, be safe, have fun. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.